The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with Bob Dio. Bob, making sure everything is going to go so smoothly for us as our engineer producer. Don't want to put any pressure on you or anything. It's Buckmaster on 1030. The Voice, your source for trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. Yes, we got some very good rain in parts of the city. I do hear from some folks that they didn't get any, but that's pretty typical of kind of the summer rainy season, but my, parts of downtown, over an inch. Up in the foothills area, I'd say we'd had pretty good rain. It rained for maybe, my gauge is usually, if it's a 30-minute or longer rain, that's a good one. So that's kind of the third time since the summer rainy season began that we've had three rains of pretty good, but it's still a lot of ground to make up. Let's go now on the live line. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Ward 6, joins us. We put Steve on the air, and we do so gladly to give us updates, and we get him on the air at least once a month. Councilman, how are you?
Doing okay. How are you doing, Bill?
Doing real well. Did you get some rain?
Well, yes and no. Not at the house, but at the place where I was for like 10 minutes, it was raining nicely. And out on the east side, they got, what, an inch in 12 minutes or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it depends on where you were. If you're driving around, you could have either hit it or missed it. And, you know, so, but yeah, no, it's been kind of a weird season. We're redoing the arena floor in McHale right now. And just earlier this morning, I asked them to push back our date where we can get back on the floor because the humidity's been so high that
right. The
paint's not drying, the finish isn't dry. So yeah, a lot of collateral damage to it, but not a whole lot of rain in Midtown.
Is that done quite often when you put a whole new floor in? That's a big job, isn't it?
Well, it is a big job, and we had to do it this year. Actually, sand everything off of the main plane surface because two things happened. One is that the men moved their 3-point line back. And so we had to take off the old line and put a new one in. And the second thing is one of the sponsors changed their logo. So, so we just sand it all down and repaint everything.
Hey, while we're talking about sports, and I think ice skating's a sport, I hear this news about Rio Nuevo is putting up about $350,000 to put a ice skating rink in downtown Tucson.
That is on next to the old MLK building.
Uh-huh.
It used to be a year ago at this time, it was a sand lot where people were playing volleyball. And so, yeah, the hope is to have that up and running between Thanksgiving and New Year's. And it'd be kind of fun if, you know, Tucson outdoor ice rink, sort of like back in Michigan and what we used to do on the pond. But it'll be fun, and I think it'll be an attraction. Students will be back in town for that time, and so yeah, probably get widely used because we have a lot of out of state students from the East Coast.
All right, let's get an update on the migrant situation. It seems like this move, the county is voted 3-2 to put the migrants over in an area that has not been utilized in a long time. I don't know if it's ever been utilized, actually, the Pima County Juvenile Detention Center. It was overbuilt, so there's been excess space. We had Richard Elias on the show yesterday, and he was talking about the fact that folks on the left and folks on the right, everybody seems to have a problem with this. A lot of it had to do with optics, but what's your take on this, Steve Kasachek?
I don't deal in optics. I deal in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there are some people who on the far right have an issue, not with the use of the facility itself, but with, quote, use of taxpayer dollars. I would remind them that if Border Patrol or ICE were to drop the refugee families off at the Greyhound bus depot, we would be spending taxpayer dollars on things such as police and paramedics and taking care of them out in the community. We have run over 12,000 people through the Benedictine Monastery since January, and if even half of them had wound up as street releases, we would have been spending significant amounts of taxpayer dollars not to mention the uncompensated medical care that would have been happening in some of the urgent cares in the emergency rooms if people with some of the illnesses that we've seen, and they're not communicable diseases, they're illnesses that are a result of dehydration crossing the border and some of the conditions in ICE detention facilities that we've seen. So taxpayer dollars were going to be spent regardless. This is a humanitarian way to spend them. Some of the people on the left were concerned with, as you said, the optics of what was built originally to detain juveniles as they put their lives back together. There are three dorm-style open areas. I was out there yesterday checking on the progress, and those are this is not San Quentin. We're talking about dormitory style, where they're big open areas, and they've removed the locks from doors. They have put stained glass film up on windows. Their Los Artistas has gone out and puts a lot of ceramic tile, art up on the walls. There's carpeting down. They're putting windscreen up on the outdoor exercise areas. They will have a completely separate and unique entryway. They're not coming through controlled access doors through the main facility. There are about 30 juveniles who are being housed out in different areas of the center, but not the three dorm style areas where the refugee families will be. I was on the phone earlier today with the people from Catholic Community Services who are going to be operating this under contract from the county. They have chosen to name it the Casa Alitas Welcome Center, which I think is a nice homage to the Alitas program run by volunteers for the last 5 years, beginning at the Greyhound Bus Depot and now out of the Benedictines. So it's really going to continue to be a volunteer-driven operation with CCS, Catholic Community Services, sort of the umbrella agency. I support what the county did. I'm glad that they passed it 3-2. Again, we're going to lose the monastery in a week or two. And so what the conversation is now is to finish up the work out at the Welcome Center. And that work includes things such as getting internet service out. Cox is out there doing some internet work. There's electrical work happening. They're still doing some work with respect to furniture, fixtures, equipment. So there's still things happening. We will probably start seeing stuff being moved over. By that I mean the clothing, some of the medical supplies, some of the furniture that we have at the Benedictine, and then the people, probably not until the end of next week at the earliest. We want to make sure that it is ready and it is a welcome center. They got to move some bedding over, the cots and things. And there's also talk about fixing, bunk beds and things like that for some of the families as well. So, I'm supportive of the decision. Nobody came up with a suitable alternative. People were saying you can't do this because it'll traumatize people because of what it used to be. Frankly, I've had up to 50 people staying in my office on multiple occasions, and my office used to be a police department, a police substation with detention buildings, rooms. Nobody walked out of my place traumatized. They were happy to be safe, secure, and welcome and off the streets, and that's exactly what they'll be over here at the Casa Alitas Welcome Center.
I think kudos need to go out to the developer, Ross Rolney, of what he has done over with his support over at the Benedictine.
Oh, I completely agree. Ross has been when I first met with Ross and CCS, either late December or early January, we were standing inside the Benedictine. It was completely vacant. We expected to need room for 30 or 40 people from time to time. Ross was all good with that. It was, we'll banner tape off certain areas of it. People will never get into the chapel. We'll keep them all on this floor in one part of the wing. Shortly after it opened, we were up to 200-400 people at a time in all three floors, in the basement, in the chapel, and Ross never batted an eye. In fact, he's been paying the utilities to the tune of about $4,000 or $5,000 a month.
Wow.
Hasn't charged anybody for that. The plumbing was a constant headache. When the nuns moved out, there were 16 elderly ladies in there, and they weren't challenging the plumbing and the electrical anywhere close to where three or 400 people on a 24/7 basis were. And so it's been a lot of challenges, but he stepped up to the plate. And tonight we'll be down at City Hall for the zoning examiner hearing as his piece of the process moves forward. So I mentioned a minute ago that we'll lose that facility in a week or so. The reality is that he's in the building right now doing some remediation. It's an old building, so they are certainly going to find areas where they're going to find things like asbestos that need to be contained and remediated. That's true of any old building when you do internal renovations. So he's in there doing that now. But as the zoning examiner hearing moves forward tonight, we should probably see the actual public hearing in front of the mayor and council to rezone the site in early to mid-September, which means that by Halloween he could be in the ground doing site work and utility work. So this is really, you know, really coming up right on. And we started this process got over a year ago, so it hasn't been a sprint.
All right, we're going to pause right here. Steve Kasacek, Tucson City Councilman, Ward 6, Democrat, joins us for the Buckmaster Show second segment. But right now, Councilman, it's time to talk about my favorite bakery in town, and you know what that is.
Like clockwork.
It's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. It's a great place to go right now for lunch. So if you're up in that neck of the woods, you want a great sandwich, this would be a great time to do it. And for dessert, how about some of those wonderful brownies or any of the bakery goods, the carrot cake. And, of course, they're open at Mona's now 6:30 each morning for that hot breakfast, a wide variety of breakfast items to choose from. Owner Chief Baker Steve put a large investment into the grill, and they're doing very well with it. So check it out now for breakfast and, of course, lunch. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Also a link at buckmastershow.com, not only to Mona's, but there's a couple of dozen wonderful partners that make this program possible. There are some of them legacy sponsors who've been with us since day one in January of 2011. So please give them your support. Councilman Kasacek sticks around for segment two of Buckmaster on 10:30, Tucson's source for trusted news talk. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman Ward 6, with us on the live line. I had one more question about Mr. Rolney, Ross Rolney's, the developer of the Benedictine Monastery, the next phase of that facility and its next reincarnation. What happens to the sanctuary as far the chapel area itself, Councilman?
Sure, I had that exact conversation with Ross within the last week. But so I will answer that. I wanted to say one more thing about the transition and your conversation with Richard, We have seen, and I think this is really unfortunate, we have seen people who have been working together, I mean, arm in arm, lockstep, in the support of these refugee families for 3, 4 years, 5 years in some cases. And this decision to move out to the county facility has really caused a rift in some of the relationships that we've had that have been very, very healthy and very, you know, we've kept thousands of people off the street and under care. For CCS, for Catholic Community Services, to be essentially demonized by some of the other faith community groups who have been partners in this is really unfortunate. And I would just hope that as the dust settles and as the renovations are made and the families begin to transition through the county facility, that some of the groups right now who have questions about it actually come out and walk through and experience what the families are seeing. And I hope that they will then recognize that people are not being traumatized by the history of the place, because modern, and this is a good segue to your question, every old building gets renovated at some point. It's called adaptive reuse, and this county facility, just as my office and just as many old buildings, get adaptively reused and get a new life and a new fresh coat of paint, and they're not bound by history. They move forward. So to your question about the chapel, Ross and I were actually up on the roof of the monastery a couple of weeks ago talking about just that, what's going to happen to the interior. As is typical with any rezoning, he really can't go out and start recruiting tenants until he's actually got the rezoning entitlements in hand. So he's thinking about things such as hotel space on the residential quarters, boutique hotel, that's the word I was looking for, boutique hotel on the residential quarters. For the chapel itself, though, he's talking about right now multiple options. One could be an entertainment facility, which would be great, but he's going to have some sort of an income producing operation in there as well. And so he's talking about having multiple tenants in some of these shared workspace kinds of operations that that right now is popular all over the country, where people just come in and rent an area in a workspace, and it's a shared workspace. So that's one possibility. He's talked about a small restaurant. He wants to bring something in that will serve the surrounding neighborhoods, so that people can walk in, and also the tenants of the apartments that he's building, so people can walk into the chapel and use it as whether it's a workspace or an entertainment facility or a restaurant. All of it's up in the air, and until he gets through with the actual rezoning of the site, he's not going to be in a position to be able to approach specific clients and potential clients, because he's going to be asking them to be buying a pig and a poke and wait until the rezoning's done.
All right, Paul has called us at 790-2040, and he has a money question about all of this, and I think he's referring to the Catholic Community Services. Go ahead, Paul.
We're very confused about where this money is coming from, whether city, state, federal government, and how much money is being paid to these church community services. One of my employees says it's several hundred thousand dollars being paid. Can you refresh us on that?
Sure. Catholic Community Services is not being paid a penny to operate the either out of the monastery or over at the county facility. What is happening is that the county has applied for humanitarian aid grant money that is being advertised and being offered by the federal government under the Stone Garden grant, and there is an element of the Stone Garden grant money specifically for humanitarian aid. So the painting, the carpeting, the electrical work, the plumbing work that's happening over at the county facility right now is going to be recouped by the county through the Stone Garden humanitarian aid money. It's on a reimbursement basis, and so they are fronting the cash, and then will get reimbursed through those grant dollars once they submit bills under that grant funding. But Catholic Community Services is not being paid to operate it. They're not making money off of this thing. They're under a five-year lease. They will pay a nominal amount, $100 a year, to operate. In fact, I take that back. That's not true. That was the original idea, and then the county went back and reassessed and recognized that because of the community service that they're providing, they're going to be allowed to use the space rent-free and provide the services that they are for the refugee families. And what you need to understand, Paul, is that people are being housed, they're being fed, the contact is being made with next of kin somewhere else in the country. They're being transported to the bus depot. Their contact is being made with medical volunteers through the U of A Public Health Department. So CCS is managing quite an extensive operation at no cost to the taxpayers. It is simply the renovations that are going to be paid. Now, I would add this, that the county is going to pick up the breakfast and lunch, also reimbursed under the humanitarian aid funding. They are going to pay for the custodial care of the county facility, which is to be expected, again, reimbursable under the humanitarian aid Stone Garden dollars.
Let me readdress something you brought up. You said that we've seen over the years wonderful cooperation, Steve Kasachek, between Catholic Community Services and other faith-based community services here in town. But I also have been hearing there's a lot of infighting going on. Longtime friendships have actually broken up over this.
Yep.
This is not a rumor. This is true, isn't it?
It is not a rumor. It is true, and it's unfortunate. Some of the same people that I had that I invited to our 4th of July event at the monastery have decided that a scorched earth relationship is better than moving forward, even though they may disagree in principle on using the county facility, and that really is unfortunate because I am hopeful that once the move is you know, once people are in there and they're being housed, that we can invite some of these same folks out who are members of the faith community. And that's the irony of the whole thing, is it's not, you know, far right wing people who don't want these people in our country anyway and all those talking points. These are members of the faith community who have been serving the same cohort of people together for 5 years. And you're correct. You're absolutely correct. Relationships have been shattered over this decision. The alternative, the only alternative that was offered by some of these groups is, why don't we have small scattered sites around town where we can keep 30 or 40 here and 30 or 40 at another place. The problem with that, Bill, is that we, as you know, around Easter and around Memorial Day, and the numbers fluctuate, we need a capacity of up to 300 people at a given time. And Border Patrol and ICE are not going to drive around to five or six different places and drop 30 off here and 40 off at another place. They're going to come to an intake center. That intake center does medical triage. They contact next of kin, and they do all the other things that I was just mentioning a minute ago. Then, if there's an overflow need, they can start parceling people off from the intake center. But the main site has to exist, or Border Patrol is just going to say, you know what, we're going to drop them off at the Greyhound station, and you guys figure it out. And that's no way to treat people, and it's no way that it was not an alternative. You know, the scattered sites was simply not a doable or workable alternative.
All right, I am out of time, but Wayne has called us. He's been waiting patiently, and I do want to get his question in. So if you could give us a brief answer to his question. Go ahead, Wayne. You're on the air.
Yes, I was near First and Fort Lowell during the downpour yesterday, and over at the park northwest of First and Fort Lowell, there were maybe 20 or 30 homeless people huddled underneath the Ramada. What are you going to do for these people who, I assume anyway, are residents and citizens of the United States?
Yeah, this is a very similar question to what happened with the veteran who called the last time I was on. We put over $3 million a year in federal money to homeless services that we fund probably two dozen different shelters and service operators all over the community, Primavera and La Frontera and many more. It is a false dichotomy. We can do both. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We're spending millions of dollars on homeless in this community, and we can use humanitarian aid out of Stone Garden to take care of these people who are coming into our country, dropped off and processed by ICE. They're here legally. And so it's a misnomer for guys like Wayne and Paul to suggest that we're harboring a bunch of illegals and ignoring our homeless.
All right, Steve Kasacek, thank you very much. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. You're a pro. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Steve Kasacek, 1030 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. We are up now at our mid-show break. And let me tell folks quickly, Bob, before we take the break, while we're waiting for Keith Rosenblum to call us, it'd be a great time to tell people about our great sponsor over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive from the Tucson area, visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find the listing of great places to stay and so many recreation opportunities. Good time to go over to Silver City because of the elevation. It's cooler. So anywhere up to about 10 degrees cooler than the Tucson area. So that's certainly a go in itself. Again, their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Be right back. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, FlowersRieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at SierraTucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, a 13-acre site, all the plants you could ever imagine, and all that great Mexico, Latin America, and European, much of it handcrafted merchandise as part of Zocalo, the five shops at Zocalo Village. The website, greenthingsaz.com. Before we get to Keith Rosenblum, we're already very, very short on time, but Christina, you've been waiting. You did have a comment about the homeless. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to add some information about La Frontera. I guess the caller called in about the homeless, and then they were saying they poured all this money into places like La Frontera. La Frontera is completely broken. My sister has schizophrenia. She's homeless. My mom has schizophrenia. And that system has been broken for 30 years. You can't even get a phone call in. You literally get looped around and around. I have clients who cannot get services through there.
Okay, thank you, Christina. Let's go to Keith Rosenblum, former Arizona Republic and Arizona Daily Star Border reporter. Keith Rosenblum with us on the live line. Keith, how are you?
Hello, Bill. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Arrests at the border down 28% in June. That's the first time this year the number of border crossings has declined. And there's indications from new polling that Mexicans are starting to change their attitude toward welcoming many migrants, a different attitude than they had just a year ago. What's going on, Keith?
You know, there's 120 million Mexicans, and there's probably 121 million points of view on it. I don't think that there's any kind of consensus, but I will say this, that when you pass from foreigners are a curiosity, which for a long time in a really homogenous population they were in Mexico. I never saw black people in Mexico. I rarely saw Asians. I'm talking about 30 years ago, 35 years ago when I first started going. You rarely saw very white, like Scandinavian people. Mexico, mestizo, and Spaniard is a very homogenous population, and foreigners were at one time exotic. So maybe if I go to Mexico City Airport, or Indians for that matter, people from India or Pakistan, you'd run into very few. If you were at the airport, yes, but elsewhere in the population, rare. I used to take one of my boys who's adopted Vietnamese, and when I would go into a supermarket or any public space in Mexico, it was beautiful because people would come up and almost, in spite of themselves, stroke his head, like stroke his hair. It was a wow. It was a rite. And they would say, Chino. He's Vietnamese, but they would still say Chino, which is the word for Chinese, obviously. And so there was a certain, we'll call it exotica to it. And it was lovely. I mean, we enjoyed it, and it was entertaining. Now, that passes from anecdotal or curious or exotic when you start having large numbers of people coming through your country, and a lot of them are from non-exotic places. I mean, there's nothing for Honduran or for Mexicans, people from Honduras or Guatemala or Nicaragua or the other South American countries. This is now actually a pathway to the U.S., and a lot of people now also are stopping in Mexico and saying, hey, you're a safe country, let us stay here as well. Or, you know, we may not earn what we're going to earn in the States, but give us a shot. And I think that in any economy, that's always going to cause a little bit of resentment. If I can reference the U.S., we tend to view foreigners, don't we, as being potential competition. Hello, this is exactly what Donald Trump has been telling us that we need to be fearful of. It's what the CIS, the immigration group in Washington, Center for Immigration Studies, has been telling us, that these people are here taking our jobs. I don't need to go back to, what was it, Charlottesville, where Jews will not replace us. There's always a natural fear of people who are coming in. They're going to take our jobs. It's okay if they take lower-rung jobs. Anyway, this is a long way of saying that I think Mexico is hitting a point now where it's joining the rest of the world and seeing more sheer numbers of foreigners who are coming through. That might be it. And at the same time, Mexico's own economy is doing just fine, but I think the prevailing view is, okay, if you're going to bring in other foreigners, that's fine, but please make sure that they're taking the service industry jobs or the lower-rung ones, because we really want those other ones, those skilled jobs and those computer science jobs and those other more sophisticated engineering jobs, save for us, please.
This is all part of kind of a 45-day trial to prove that the United States measures that the U.S. wants to see that Mexico is taking to stem migrants, right?
Yes. I mean, Mexico it's fascinating because, Bill, I want to tell you and your listeners, if you ever have a chance at all, every single day, every single weekday, President López Obrador has his morning news conference. This morning's was 2 hours long. He both addresses questions himself and he brings in his own cabinet to talk about things. It is fascinating in terms of understanding where the country's going, where things are today, and where the president's going to take them. This is a transparency in government I've never seen before in any government, and I include U.S., I include other governments that I've read about or learned about. And Mexico right now is very much on trial. President López Obrador placated the U.S. by saying, okay, we're going to go ahead and do pretty much everything you've requested because we want to avoid the tariffs that you're going to affix to our exports otherwise. And so the country did it. And the U.S. also is a signatory to this policy where it also pledges to help out in terms of looking for, you know, greater opportunities for Central American countries, the same ones that are exporting the people to Mexico, and then, of course, on to the U.S.
Well, bottom line, Keith Rosenblum, has the so-called National Guard, which was mobilized to the border, is this making any difference in stopping this flow?
The National Guard is no. The National Guard is simply a new police force. It shouldn't even be called that. It just happens to be a police force with a national name. The federal police have been morphed into it. And so the National Guard is now a little bit more controllable. It doesn't have all of the local influence of local police departments. It's more like a national, more like the equivalent of a state police, but lumped under a single federal entity. And so I forget the numbers, 16,000 of them more nationwide with a lot more to come. The idea is to have something of a national scope under the leadership of the federal government and not the regional police forces that you had previously. It's easier for the federal government to control it, than it was for them to take an amalgam of all the, you know, the 32 states and the municipalities. And what they did at the same time is they brought the standards way up for cops, paid them better. And so you have a more organized, more professional, better educated workforce. A lot of the people who were with either federal or state agencies that wanted to apply for those jobs couldn't. They didn't qualify. It's very close to being not an FBI level, but it's somewhere between a it's short of that, but for Mexico, it's a very demanding and much more professional police force than they've been accustomed to.
All right, Keith Rosenblum, we're going to have to leave it right there. Thank you, Keith. It's always a pleasure with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Keith Rosenblum is the Buckmaster contributor on Mexico and the border. Coming up next, one of our great contributors. We've got such a great team of contributors, more than 24 of them. All of their bios are listed at buckmastershow.com. These are very accomplished people. Our legal contributor is attorney Don Luce. He is next on the Buckmaster Show. We're going to be talking about recreational marijuana. Is that going to be legalized? Will it make a make the ballot here in Arizona? Lots of questions for Don Luce after we take the break on 10:30 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. I'm Bill Buckmaster, back with you.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 10:30 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk here in Southern Arizona. Attorney Don Luce is the Buckmaster Show contributor. Don Luce of Luce Law Group with offices here in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the author of two very popular books on the law, books for the, not books necessarily written for attorneys, these are written for consumers. Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, that's in its second printing. And now, also in its second printing, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books, very important, lots of important information there. Don Luce joining us on the live line. Don, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for asking. It's fascinating to see the Attorney General Mark Brnovich of Arizona last week saying that he wants state lawmakers to debate and then enact a law that would allow recreational marijuana use for adults. And this would be rather than the risk, I guess, of an industry crafted measure that would go, that could possibly win as an initiative at the ballot box. Now the governor, who remains personally opposed to recreational use, said he is open to the possibility of signing such a law as an alternative to an initiative. This is very interesting about, in effect, kind of a preemptive strike, Don Luce.
It is. And what makes it particularly so, Bill, is that both the Attorney General and the governor are generally opposed to the notion of recreational marijuana. As you know, marijuana is still a Schedule I drug under the Drug Enforcement Administration guidelines, which means that it is prohibited in all 50 states. Nonetheless, 11 states and the District of Columbia have recreational marijuana laws. The industry is putting hundreds of thousands of dollars to work in Arizona to put a initiative on the November 2020 ballot. I don't think it's a matter of whether the supporters are going to get enough signatures to get it on the ballot. I think rather the question is, what is the ballot initiative going to look like if they do that? And that's where the Attorney General and the governor have weighed in and said, hey, wait, because of the Voter Protection Act, which Arizona enacted in 1998, and which prohibits the legislature essentially from changing anything that is voter approved, because of that, the Attorney General and the governor are saying, look, we could probably craft a better recreational marijuana law through the legislative process than to have the industry come in and put a ballot initiative on the November 2020 ballot, which would be essentially a take it or leave it proposition. Either it all passes or it all fails. And with the Voter Protection Act, I think the concern is that there may be some things in the initiative that the Attorney General and or the governor would have concerns about and which could not then be changed by legislative action.
I'm looking at the map. My fine producer engineer, Bob Dio, just brought it up about the states that have gone the legalization of recreational use. You've got Washington, Oregon, Nevada, California, Alaska, Colorado, Illinois, Maine, and looks like District of Columbia, Vermont as well. Okay, those are pretty much blue states. If we were to go recreational, we'd be kind of the first, I think, red state to go in that direction, Don Luce.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Michigan, which went red a couple of years ago,
right,
during the presidential election, is on that list of recreational. But otherwise, you're right. The states which have adopted legislation to legalize marijuana generally are blue states. Now, a recent poll of Arizona voters shows that this initiative would have the support of a majority. I think something like 52% of respondents polled on this issue have said that they would be in favor of recreational marijuana. And if you remember back to 2016, when this same proposal was on the ballot, it only lost by about 2 percentage points. It was a pretty close vote. And I think since then, what we've seen nationally, at least, is the trend towards legalizing marijuana. And I think 4 years later, and from 2016 until 2020 in Arizona, I think sentiment has changed. And I think if it goes on the ballot in 2020, there is a really good chance that it's going to pass.
I'm looking at this list that was put out by the Arizona Republic, 10 things to look for in a ballot measure to legalize recreational marijuana in Arizona. There's some very interesting items on the list, including what about driving under the influence, and what about marketing to children? How about local control? Those are a few of this list. Your comments, please.
Okay. So I think first and foremost, we want to know how many licenses are going to be issued, right? Mm-hmm. Currently, there are about 116 medical marijuana dispensaries in operation in Arizona. Okay, So I'm assuming that if we have recreational marijuana, that number is going to increase to something greater than that. That number still has not yet been determined. And I think it's also interesting to note by comparison that a neighboring state, Colorado, has more than 500 retail marijuana dispensaries in operation. And what is really interesting about that is Colorado has more retail marijuana dispensaries in operation than the number of Starbucks in the state.
Oh, my goodness. So, well, you know, people always joke about the fact, Don Luce, there's a Starbucks on every corner. Well, if there's more, there seems like there'd be a marijuana dispensary on just about every corner.
Okay, so knowing that marijuana is a billion-dollar industry and that Arizona intends to tax it, there will be a sales tax on marijuana. Where does that money go? Where do the tax dollars go that are generated from the sale of marijuana? Okay, that's an open question.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, Bill, if recreational marijuana becomes legalized in Arizona and an employee shows up for work and the employer suspects that the employee is under the influence of marijuana?
Right.
Can the employer send the employee home?
Right.
Can the employer put the employee on probation? Can the employer fire the employee? So these are all open questions. And what about those jobs that require a heightened level of attention to detail, either for safety or security reasons? What about workplace safety?
Mm-hmm.
All open questions. There's another question that I think is really interesting, and that is, what about the people who currently have convictions on their record for possession of marijuana?
Oh.
Okay, so let's take the most recent state to legalize marijuana, which is Illinois. They just legalized it. In Illinois, there are nearly a million people with convictions for possessing small amounts of marijuana.
Wow.
So I don't suppose there are a million people in Arizona because we're a smaller state by population, I believe. But nonetheless, what do we do with people who have convictions on their record? In Illinois, those people are allowed to have their records expunged, which means essentially wiped clean. So if you legalize marijuana in 2020 in Arizona, what about somebody who was convicted in 2019 for illegal possession of marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you do with that person? Mm-hmm. Open question. Okay, so now let's assume marijuana is legalized. Can you grow it at home? If it's legal, why can't you grow it in the garden with your tomatoes and peppers?
There you go.
Open question.
Yep.
And if you can't, and if you can grow it at home, how much can you grow? Can
mm-hmm.
you plant the entire garden with marijuana, or would you be limited in the quantity? Question yet to be answered. Something that you brought up, which is driving under the influence. So we know that under state statute, it is illegal to drive under the influence of drugs or alcohol to the slightest degree. Okay, so prosecuting marijuana cases is especially tricky because, unlike alcohol, the marijuana metabolite can be detected in a person's blood for up to 30 days after the consumption.
Wow.
And our Arizona Supreme Court has said, and this was a case that went up about 2 years ago, where a person had in his or her bloodstream the metabolite, and was convicted of driving under the influence. The Arizona Supreme Court said that the mere presence of a non-impairing metabolite of the drug in a person's blood is not enough to prove that the person was impaired. But then the question is, what evidentiary value, if any, would that have, and how would a law enforcement officer actually determine if a person who was using marijuana recreationally was impaired at the time of operating a motor vehicle?
Oh, boy.
Still an open question.
We're going to have to leave it right there, Don. We're out of time already. There's so much to talk about. Why don't we pick this up maybe next month? This is great.
Sounds like a plan. Okay, Bill.
Thanks. Don Luce with us on the Buckmaster Show. two very important books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers. His other book, State Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. I'm Bill Buckmaster, Bob Dio, also wishing you well for the afternoon and evening. We'll be back with you Friday Focus interview tomorrow talking about city parks. Have a great afternoon.